Pod Clubhouse and Decorating the Set from Hollywood to Your Home with Beth Kushnick are pleased to announce our Frontline Workers Hero Appreciation Contest.
Running from now until May 19th, the rules for the contest are simple. We want you to nominate the frontline worker hero in your life and tell us why. That's it. That's all you have to do.
The frontline worker chosen will win a design consultation with interior designer to the stars and set decorator, Beth Kushnick.
As well as a gift certificate sponsored by Raymourn Flanagan to help put your design ideas into action. To nominate your frontline worker hero, just head to podclubhouse.com and fill out the official contest form. See the post at Pod Clubhouse for all of the official rules and contest information. No purchase or payment is necessary to enter.
Void where prohibited by law.
Pod Clubhouse.
April is for Apple. Apple TV Plus, that is. Each week in April, our Love It or Leave It episodes will be featuring original movies and TV series streaming on Apple TV Plus right now.
This is Paul.
This is Kat.
And this is Sheila.
And today, we three have been the lucky ones chosen out of all possible Pod Clubhouse co-host to talk about Apple TV Plus's For All Mankind. This was one of the shows that the service premiered with when it went live, and the second season recently finished up. I'm just drawn to this series. I'm a science fiction lover. I am an alternate history. I don't know. I wouldn't say that I'm committed to that genre, but I do enjoy it. I do like it whenever I see it. What drew you guys to this show, Kat?
Well, this podcast episode, but if I'm being honest, I had not heard about this show. And I guess, full transparency, I hadn't been to Apple Plus in a while. And then I watched Ted Lasso. And then it was like, came up and I was like, well, I guess I'll stay on the Apple Plus train. And so I don't know. But then it did get me hooked. And I'm excited to talk to you guys because I haven't talked to anybody about this show as I've been binging it. And I have a lot of mixed thoughts. And it's the most mixed that I've ever been, I think, binging a show. So I'm just like, I don't know. It sucked me in, but then I have like moments, I don't know, like love it and leave it. So I'm really excited to kind of see what you guys, and see if I'm crazy or if it's, I don't know, if it's just me. So
good. I'm glad. If we're all just agreeing all the time, then that's not much of a podcast. So I'm glad to have another perspective. What about you, Sheila?
I too hadn't really been on the Apple TV Plus app. And then I started watching Ted Lasso. And Dickinson. So I watched Dickinson, and then it was like, all right, you know, Ted Lasso, I keep hearing about it. And then I was seeing promos for it, and then I was starting to see commercials for it. And like the music actually sucked me in. I'm a child of the 80s. So I was hearing, you know, Sweet Dreams, and I was like, all right, it's set in space. And then when I learned it was an alternate reality kind of a setup, I was like, oh, I like that. Because I'm a fan of Man of the High Castle for the first like two seasons. When it started going really off the rails, I was like, I don't know. But I do like that alt. I do like that alt reality. Like, you know, what if this momentum occasion did not go the way that, you know, we thought it did, and where does that leave us? So I was just really enthralled then by watching season one. It was a slow burn for me, and then I got hooked.
It does kind of feel that way.
I'm sorry, slow burn. Wow, pun intended.
You know, the pilot, I rewatched some of the pilot this morning just to remind myself where we all started with these characters. It is a great pilot. It's got that replaying of that moment where the timeline splits, basically, you know, and this shouldn't be any spoiler to anybody that's interested in watching, because this is the beginning of the show.
And it's also the premise of the show.
Yeah, yeah. It's watching the moon landing. And instead of everybody, everybody wants to see it, but instead of everybody smiling, everybody's frowning. And that's because the Russians beat us there, us being Americans. The story spins out from there. It interweaves real people with new fictional people, along with characters that were kind of openly based on other real people that wind up not in the show by name, but maybe partially in spirit. While you were watching this, did you ever feel like, I need to look this up because this feels like something I should know? Or something like that.
Oh yeah, I googled. I think especially with the in the first season early on, it's the, you know, they have to bring women into the ranks and train them, and so it was really cool seeing you know, that some of those ladies, especially a fellow Losty, which I, you know, what's her name? Sonia Walger, Molly Cobb. Yeah. I was like, oh, I love her. And I love that she was the badass woman. And she's actually based on a real character. And so that never really got to go to space. She had trained in the Mercury, what, 7 or 13?
It was 13. It was the one that they did it, but it didn't count or something to that effect.
Yeah, and then I learned later, like you know, that Glenn, was it John Glenn? He was the one, like, he went up when he was older to orbit the moon to test, like, for, you know, effects on space age, you know, on the elderly. And that she was, like, championing wanting to do that as well because she had never gone. And then, you know, like, it was later on, maybe we had progressed. And apparently they told her, oh, why would we want to send someone that's really old, basically? It's like, what? So NASA had a chance to kind of right the wrong, and they didn't. So to answer your question, I did Google and go down the rabbit hole with some of these characters.
All right. Well, that's a good point. So that actually puts a pin in a topic that I will bring up again in what we call the last half, the spoilery half of this Love It or Leave It review, because I would definitely like to discuss with you guys your perspective on the plot point of bringing women into the program. Anyone that's just looking at the titles of the episodes, if that's not spoilery stuff, and it's not because they publish that, then they'll see an episode called Nixon's Women.
Yeah.
so that's not spilling any beans there. That's out in the open. I would say that the means by which they decide to do that is a discussion point that I would like to get back to you guys.
I agree, especially with some of the other casts that react to this.
What about you, Sheila? Were you ever like, that seems familiar. I gotta look that up.
Yeah, there was definitely some moments, and especially in season two, there was, you know, without being like a spoilery thing, because this actually happened, the KAL airliner disaster. That was an actual thing. I mean, how they used it in the show was different, but I was like, wait a second, that feels familiar. So I looked that up, and also, you know, just the fact that they brought in like Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, I was like, okay, those were right for the timeline. Because stuff like that actually drives, like, it's very nitpicky, but it drives me nuts when they use things in shows or movies, and it's like, but that didn't actually come out until 1985, and you're using it in 1982. So, like, I appreciate when people are true to the timeline of things. So that was something too that I was just like, okay, Wheel of Fortune Kate was out like in the early 80s, so like that worked for me.
Did they ever flash up in season two what year they've jumped to?
Yeah, the very beginning of season one, we're in the Jamestown colony. It says like May something 1983.
Oh, okay.
They kept mentioning 10 years in the second season. Yeah so it
was all right. Because
I actually went back to look at that because I'm like, where are they in time?
Yeah, I was trying to date it by like what they're wearing or, you know, stuff. One character has an Apple II computer, so I'm like, enough of a nerd to know when that came out,
right?
Right. But then one character that we should probably spend some time talking about, Alita. I noticed what adult Alita was wearing, and I'm like, that was more of a 1988-89 fashion style.
She was definitely wearing like some Z Cavaricci's, and I'm like, that was way late in the 80s. Like, that was like almost like the 90s.
The metal belt tips and all that. I'm like, that's a little later than I think this is. Because I spent a lot of time looking at girls in that time frame.
They brought back some memories, Paul.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
I was actually surprised that this wasn't actually based on a book. Like, I figured, like, a story this big and, like, the level of detail that they got to, like, I assumed that it was going to be based on a book. I was like, oh, who was this written by? I was like, oh, it's not.
That's a good point. I mean, this is a genre that does get some traction in, you know, the written word novels. There are some people that this is the only thing that they write. I don't know that it's super popular. It's definitely like a sub genre usually. But you're right. I hadn't heard of this one. This is, and they're all based on that same kind of precept, which is change this one thing. You know, did the South win the Civil War? You know, something like that. And then move on from there. What were you going to say, Kat?
Oh, I was just going to say what you guys thought about the jump of, you know, the time in between and how, I don't know, I found it a little bit jarring at first. And then I was like, okay, I'll go with it.
Well, you know, the trick that they tell you with writing is you got to pick the part where the stuff is happening, right? And then write about that. They give us enough to assume in what direction different characters went after we saw them at the end of season one. However, in some cases, I think I would have wanted some of those intervening details.
Yes.
You know? It wasn't by the end of season two. I don't know that I had filled in enough with my little mental crayons and what they gave me to have a satisfying picture of how they got there.
See, I liked it. I was like, okay, they're just going to fast forward 10 years into the future. And they didn't use flashbacks, so they just kind of filled in the story. Like, they showed, like, Tracy and Gordo. I was like, okay, they're divorced. Okay. Obviously, we can see they had problems from season one and just where they're at. And, like, Ellen and her husband, obviously, he's got his own sort of extracurricular activities outside the marriage that they've sanctioned. But, you know, we fill in the fact that she's lonely. She never really got over Pam without flashback. So I was like, oh, even though, yes, Kat, your word jarring is kind of where I was like very disoriented about like where everyone is. But then I was just like, but they're doing this in a skillful way for me to like catch up with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you have to kind of make some stretches to your point, Paul, you know, where the mental crayon lines are not all filled in. But I was just like, I was okay with it. You know,
I'm okay with that active TV watch. You know, I'm okay with that. You know, having to use your brain muscles to figure out where we're at. And no one lost me. There was no point where I was like, wait, yeah. It's just a couple of those deets, you know?
And I think it's with certain characters that I guess we'll go into the spoiler section that I wasn't okay with, because on the one hand, I really liked, and I don't know if we've talked about the creators of the show, but like Ronald Moore, which is like an Outlander, is the Outlander creator as well. So I was like, that kind of sucked me in, I guess, to your initial question. I don't know. I think it's just, some of the characters' plot points, it just felt a little like stretchy, but I like that they went for it, because we've seen all the other series that just go in succession and then they drag out for a season. And with these new kind of streaming shows, you know, they might not even get another season. So I guess they were like, let's just go for it. So I kind of liked it. I like that. But I think there's just a few points where I was like, I don't know. Like, they didn't fill it in later down the road like they did with some of the characters in season two.
When we get there, I want to talk about Alita with regard to the time jump, because that's one of the characters I feel. They gave us enough to know how it went, but man, I think that deserved a little more. Anyhow, you brought up the creators, Ron D. Moore, very, very famous science fiction-y kind of creator. He is the one half of the brains behind Battlestar Galactica and that universe. He, like you mentioned, brought Outlander to life. It's a successful series of books about a time-traveling woman who manages to make love in all time frames.
Yes.
In all manners.
Get it, girl.
She does.
My husband has a nickname for it, but I'm not going to say it because he would get canceled.
That's funny. Do you guys watch on Hulu the cartoon Solar Opposites?
No,
it just came out. I haven't watched it yet. No.
they make a fairly R-rated reference to Outlander.
Nice.
One character is trying to sort out what that show is about. The other one describes it in fairly graphic detail, and they're not wrong. They're not wrong.
Yeah. It's probably the same sentence. But in all fairness, he came in at the end of season one when I was watching the finale of Outlander. And yeah, it's pretty jarring. Like, talk about jarring.
Sheila, you might not want to watch Solar Opposites with your kid. Kat, you can go ahead and watch whenever you want.
Yeah, that'll be an after nine kind of a watch for me.
It's funny, though. It's very funny. Anyhow, he also brought the original version of Roswell to television and was a big wheel in Star Trek The Next Generation toward the end, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine and Voyager. So he comes from that. He also worked on Carnival on HBO. I mean, these are all shows that just sing to me.
Mm-hmm. Same over here.
Also did Electric Dreams over on Amazon, which was the, I believe that's the Philip K. Dick stories. I think Bryan Cranston was also a producer and an actor in one of those episodes.
Well, Philip K. Dick is all about, didn't he do Man in the High Castle? Is that him?
That's his story. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Like all this alternate reality. So this is all, and then even Star Trek Generations, when he did that, that's almost like an alternate reality too. You have the two, you know, the Nexus. Sorry, mm-hmm. I really like that movie, so I know it. So you have these alternate realities. So I like this genre. So when it was Ron D. Moore, I was going down his creds. I'm like, all right, I like you, man.
And I feel like even though he's like big and he, I guess in the television world, he's getting hired on to all these big shows. But I feel like in terms of like, I don't know if the normal TV watcher would know Ron Moore, you know, so I feel he's kind of underrated in a way. But I mean, he's getting all the gigs, so he's not hurting or anything. But
yeah, I didn't know his name. And then once I saw all his stuff, I'm like, oh, OK, I know your work.
He's sort of a George Lucas looking guy.
Yeah.
Beard. Yeah, he does, and long hair. But he was at ATX a couple of years ago. Did you see that session?
Yeah, I went to the Battlestar Galactica session.
For as pretentious as he might look with his, you know, feathered hair and all that, he is a pretty down-to-earth speaking guy.
He just seems like he really loved, and I also probably, you know, when I saw his name in the credits, I was like, you know what, I'm going to give this shot, because I know that he's one of, having seen him at ATX and like knowing that he cares about the source material, and I've seen him in those, like in the beginning shows, because I think he left Outlander towards the end, kind of just moved on. But he used to do those after, like the 2 minute, you know, the after shows after every episode.
Oh yeah, like little blurbs, yeah.
Yeah, and after the way he would talk about the material, you knew like he was just very passionate about, you know, making sure he got the story right. And I love that. So I was really curious about this one because I love alternate histories as well. So yeah, you can kind of just tell like if he brought it to life, he must have put a lot of, you know, thought and detail into it, and it wasn't just going to be whatever to get it off the ground. Pun intended.
Now, I don't think you can find it anymore. I think they are not in the podosphere anymore, but back when Battlestar Galactica was on TV as a first run show, he did his own podcast that he did with his wife, actually. And because I guess his wife was in the costumes department for the show,
or cool.
Something like that. And so he would just pour himself a scotch and run the show in real time so that it was basically like a running director's, in this case, producer's commentary on every episode. And the insight that you could get into the story, the making of the show, the reason decisions were made. He just laid it all out there episode by episode. It was really fun to listen to. I would recommend it, but I've looked for it since then, and I don't think it's out there. So that's a real bummer. But at least I got it the first time around. Yeah. So, but if you look at the other two credited executive producers, there's someone named Ben. I'll not get it right, but it looks like it says Nadivi.
I'd go with that.
Yep. And Matt Wolpert. And those two look like they came from Fargo together, as well as the Umbrella Academy.
Ooh, I love Umbrella Academy.
Same.
That is a great show. By the way, are you too hyped for that new superhero show on Netflix next month? It's called like the Jupiter something, Jupiter Legacy maybe?
Yeah, I'm sure I'm going to watch it. Yeah.
Go watch the preview as soon as we're done talking. You're going to want it like as soon as you see it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I can't even. It's basically like superheroes have a certain generation is kind of retired, but the world might need him again. You know, it's Josh Duhamel's like the lead guy, but he's old looking. I don't know. It looked good. It looked like a show that they took seriously rather than too goofy, like you might get with a superhero show. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of the characters and actors. One of the problems that I had getting into this show the first time around, even though I found the pilot very good. It had a great hook, you know. Mm-hmm. It had the opening scene that I mentioned a minute ago in terms of recreating the spot in time when everything changed from our reality to theirs and how it played out. But then it also ends with a pretty compelling image of how our moon landing wound up in their universe. But then the next couple of episodes made it so that I couldn't figure out who this effing show was about. Yeah. You know? And it's only from looking at the top billed actors that you have a chance of like kind of figuring out, oh, all right, that these are the people I kind of need to care about. These other people are going to kind of come and go. Did you guys have any problem like that?
Yeah, I did. I have to say it did take me 3 episodes to kind of really get into it. And I was kind of like, ugh. Like, and it wasn't anything where it was like really, it wasn't bad. Like I hated it or anything. It was just kind of like I said, mixed. Like I was like, I like the premise. I like the alternate history. Like I should love this show in theory, but it wasn't happening for me. And I was like, oh, I don't know. And then it finally like took off after that. But I think one of the issues was like, there were so many characters and like the main character, Ed Baldwin, who's played by Joel Kinnaman, who I like as an actor. Like, I feel like he wasn't really like the main one, which I'm okay with, like, you know, how they were doing like the ensemble and like it wasn't just focused on one, because I think that's like, I don't know, it's like a different shift in the way they're making TV now, right? It's not necessarily like you're going to be the main one. So I was like okay with that as like a choice. But then it was a little bit weird, like I don't know who to care about. And then when they brought in like the women aspect of, you know, we're going to bring on women, and then like some of the character choices, and I was just like, what is going on? Like, and it was,
learn all these new names.
Yeah. Yeah. And then like some were just not like likable. And then like some of the, like, and then Chantel Van Senten, who plays Karen, who's the, Ed Baldwin's wife. Like I know her from The Boys and I love her. And then like in her character, I was just like, I do not like her character. I don't know if you feel like it, but it's like the tone was just so off. I was like, is this like a sci-fi show? Is this like a 50s show? Is this like breaking the, like trying to be progressive, but it's not, because you guys are still like bringing up the sexism and stuff. So it was just like all over the place is my thing. And I was just like, whoa, like I can follow it, but I don't know where you want me to go, you know?
Yeah.
I kind of thought it was a slow burn. Like I used that term earlier. Like it took about 4 episodes for it to really kind of like smolder for me, because I was just like, who are all these people? And what you said about Karen's character, I didn't like her. I mean, when she was telling Tracy, like, you can't get divorced, you know, this whole, that, I was just like, what is the message of this show? Like, I already know that, like, it's already been, you know, this very devastating loss to the United States' pride. And, you know, we've been hit in that way. And now you're saying that, like, she can't basically pursue her own happiness. And at that point, I was like, do I continue or do I not? I said, let me give it one more episode. I feel like episode 4 into episode 5 was really like when I was just like, okay, I'm hooked now. That could turn a lot of people off early on. Like if you're not invested in these characters and understanding, you know, where this is going, you might just be like, enough.
It brings up an interesting point that maybe we can cover more fully in a little bit, which is that Sony, which is the company that made this, even though it's, you know, streaming on Apple TV, whenever you turn it on, the first credit you see is Sony Pictures Television. They've already greenlit season 3. They were so sure that they were going to be fine with this that they greenlit it before season 2 started.
Well, that's good.
Yes, given where it ends in season 2. But we can probably follow up on tone or those progressive type issues that Kat brought up with regard to the renewal, or if you think that they might be tied together.
There's a shift in season 2 that we, you know, we can get into. So I think it kind of cleared up some things, but then I still had some issues with the same character, to be honest, but
same, yeah.
And then like I said, I know we're going to bring up like, do you love it or leave it? And I'm like, there's some parts that I really love and there's some parts I want to leave it. So I'm like, I really don't know.
So like what they just mentioned, there are a ton of characters. The first credited character, the star, is Joel Kinnaman. He plays fictional astronaut Ed Baldwin, who has his ups and downs. And I guess the issue I had with not recognizing that Ed was who we're supposed to follow primarily, I guess. I'm kind of, you know, moving my hands up and down, sort of like a, I don't know, kind of emotion. It's just that there wasn't some aspect about him that like sung out as like superiorly interesting or likable or something about him. In fact, in some ways, his buddy Gordo is probably, even as flawed as he is the guy you'd actually want to know. out of those two guys.
Well, he sounds like the life of the party. You know, he's a little bit more of a compelling figure.
Yeah, and then Tracy, which is Gordo's wife, is also, like, that couple they're my favorite parts of the show, like season one and season two. I think they have the, like, good arcs and, you know, they're funny. They're also, they have depth to them. So, yeah, it's funny that, like, Joel Kinnaman's, like, and, like, Ed and Karen are, like, maybe the main ones, but they're, like you said, they're not as interesting. And I don't know if you feel this, because I tried watching the show that he was in, another Netflix show, The Altered Carbon, and he's like a very like leading man-esque, right? Like he's tall, he's good looking, but for some reason he doesn't like bring you in. And I think this show kind of showed that like he doesn't have that quality that maybe it kind of is just like,
You know, I felt the same way about Altered Carbon. You're right. He was the hero. He was the protagonist of that show. I never really liked him.
Yeah. Like you're like, he has all the qualities. You're like, yes, this is who you root for. And I love, you know, but it's just something about him that he just doesn't have it. And I think this show also kind of like, unfortunately, like I want to love him, but I like it's just kind of meh.
I've watched just a few minutes of Hannah, where he stars in sort of a more of a character role, and he's more reserved. You know, he's not asked to be the guy. That character is more compelling, actually. The show is called Hannah. He's not Hannah. Yeah. You know, so he is Hannah's father figure, and he works better in that role. This reminds me of a podcast I heard a while ago where these film critics were talking about Ben Affleck and his role in, I think the movie was called Hollywoodland. Did you guys ever see that one?
Mm-mm.
It was about the murder of George Reeves, the man who played Superman on TV in the black and white TV era. He was killed because somebody wanted to see if he was really bulletproof.
Oh, God.
I know. People were dumb back then.
Back then? You've been very kind.
And so the story was about that. But it wasn't about him. It was about the people investigating. So his character needed to come up a lot. This is unusual ground for Ben Affleck, right? To be a supporting actor. He's normally the man. Mm-hmm. And the comment was that he is, and see if you get this on the first try, because it took me a couple minutes to fully understand it, which was that he is a character actor in a leading man's body.
That's what I was about to say. Oh my God.
Yeah,
that's what I figured out. It's like they're trying to make the lead actor in Joel Kinnaman happen because he's like tall, good looking. And I think it does not suit him. I think he seems like he's uncomfortable in a way. Right.
Mm.
Do you guys get that?
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, he ticks a lot of like leading man boxes, but there's just something not there.
It's not that he can't act.
No,
it's not that. I'm also going to do a shameless plug. We did a Love It or Leave It for Hannah season two.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
so
right.
We got that. So shameless plug. Go check that out.
Here I am talking about Hannah.
I know. And I was like, oh, I was going to jump in, but you know, that's fine.
Well, got you it know, in there. He doesn't need to be the man in Suicide Squad. He does a little better in that role, you know, because he's got the Joker and other bigger characters to contend with. Harley Quinn. Everyone else basically has a bigger, louder, brasher character than him because he's just a guy. And I think he works better in that. Personally, so Joel Kinnaman is Ed, and as you mentioned, Chantel Van Zanten is his wife, Karen, and she, like you said, it's an unusual character for her because she normally plays. I've seen her in two other shows. I've seen her in Sniper, and I've seen her in.
I saw her in Sniper too.
The Boys. Mm-hmm. I wonder if she's gonna get shot in the neck. Because that seems to be how she goes down in all of her other TV shows.
I was just thinking, like, you need a better agent. Like, why would you get this role? Like, you're not doing anything. I was very upset.
So you didn't like Karen, though, huh?
No, in season two, like, I was liking her, and then something happened, and I did not like her.
Right. We can talk about Karen in season two later, because that change, that whole plot that I think you're mentioning,
yes,
made me, you know, a little barfy, curious just why the F they decided to do that.
Yeah, I didn't like her in season one at all.
oh, so you were already there.
I was already there. And then, you know, I felt that she was very hypocritical in season two. And yeah, it was a barfy kind of a moment. Yeah, I'm still scratching my head as to why it needed to happen. But maybe it needed to happen for what she plans to do next. I don't know. But we're never warm to her. Again, the sexist tendencies that she came out with in very early on, in almost her first real speaking role, I was like, oh, you are not the person for me.
We also have a man who plays Gordo, Michael Dorman. I don't recognize his work. He looks like he has worked a lot in his native New Zealand, but his work hasn't crossed over.
Yeah, I didn't know him at all, but I really liked him in this character. So as Gordo, and him and Tracy, I think like in season one, it was okay. And then like in season two, I really enjoyed them together.
Have either of you seen either The Right Stuff, the movie, or The Right Stuff, the TV show?
I've seen the movie.
Do you remember Gordo Cooper in that?
Yeah.
So this Gordo Stevens, is sort of like a wink at Gordo Cooper, apparently.
Okay.
If you recall, the real Gordo Cooper, was cheating on his wife.
Yeah.
in the middle of all of this. You know,
nice homage, I suppose.
And yeah. Well, and the whole theme of, I need you to put on a good face so that they will let me go into space, kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, we need to look the part as well as, you know, be able to do the job.
Now, I know that the show universe goes a totally different direction with his wife character, which is Tracy, but that those elements were drawn from the real life Gordo Cooper, who he and his wife did not stay married in real life. So we might as well mention Tracy then, Sarah Jones, who, she's got one of those faces that you're like, I know you. And I look at her credits, and she spent a long time on Sons of Anarchy and Big Love, two shows that I watched from start to finish, but I can't remember her character.
She was in Big Love? I don't even remember her from the show at all.
She was a character named Bryn.
Okay.
Yes. Were you like, you know, out in Juniper Hill or whatever the community was? I don't remember you.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I find her so compelling in this show, so.
Yeah, she's got a great character. What do you think, Kat?
Yeah, I really loved her. And I think as far as like the women in the series go, she's been one of my favorites.
Very fiery, probably more of a stand-in for what a woman of modern sensibility would probably be like if she was kind of inserted back then.
Yeah, and I love that she was able to kind of, I mean, I don't know if it's really a spoiler, but like, she's able to go and fly and do her own thing and kind of take, like what every housewife would have, maybe, not every, because I don't want to speak for everyone, but like maybe most, like if they could have gone off and like stopped their home life and then gone off and done whatever the career they wanted, like I feel like that was like the cool alternate history, you know, of like what it could have been if you were able to just kind of go off and do your own thing with your husband.
Like in the most spectacular way possible.
Yes.
So this, those are fictional characters that they play on the show. There are a few other people that are from this time. Like, you know, there's an actor for Alan Shepard and other actual astronauts. But the story takes a route that basically assumes that they did their part and these other astronauts, they just kept coming up in the rotation, I guess. And so instead of continuing on, those well-known actual astronauts, they go another direction. Like the man who runs the place, Thomas Paine, he's a real person. Or Von Braun, the German that was kind of, that was in charge, he was a real person, a very certifiable real person.
He also featured in a podcast that we did called Hunters.
Oh, did he?
Yes.
That's very interesting.
Yes, lots of crossover here tonight.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and it's...
Which just means I talk a lot, really. That's what this comes down to.
He was a real person. I mean, he, for anyone listening, he, and that you don't know, he built rockets for Hitler and was responsible for the rockets that were hitting London. Then we got him after the war, and he started building rockets for us to do this. Yep.
Through something called Operation Paperclip, with this very disgusting program where the United States wanted to rescue Nazi scientists so that they would not go to the Soviet Union.
There is a line in The Right Stuff, and I'm sure it's probably fact, which is something along the lines of, don't the Russians have Germans? And then the other man responds, yes, but our Germans are better than their Germans.
Yeah, that's a direct, you know, corollary to this Operation Paperclip. They were basically cherry picking who were the best scientists and medical personnel, basically to bring them over. So some of the Nazi doctors that were working on these Holocaust inmates, prisoners, slaves, were brought into the space program because they'd already done all these disgusting experiments and they knew sort of what deprivation did to people.
In the show, Von Braun is represented as having a very powerful role within NASA. And I don't know if that's true or not. I mean, I looked him up because, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, it made me want to look it up and see, did this person with this background have that much power at NASA? And it didn't sound like it. Maybe he did because he went back so long in, you know, history. But in terms of, like, basically, he's represented as presented as the boss. And I don't get the sense that he was ever the boss. Anyway, we should move on to other elements, because there are so many characters. We could just fill out another 3 hours talking about all the characters. A lot of the show is purported to take place in Houston. I have some questions about that. I'm sure they got some plate shots in Johnson Space Center, but I don't think the show takes – I don't think they shoot here, being Houston, where I live. Because there are a few things that they don't get quite right. And then I guess our launches take place in Florida, so there's some bit that takes place there. Is there any place I'm missing setting-wise?
Space.
Space, exactly. Yeah, good call.
We know what that is. But yeah, it's funny that you mentioned like Houston. I mean, I live in Austin, so I don't know. I've only visited Houston a few times, but like I was actually, when you brought that up, I just thought about it and I was like, while they kept mentioning they're in Houston and all that, and NASA's there, you don't really get a sense of that place to like in a way, like it's so in the NASA like control room, or it's, you know, they're in their car, fancy cars, or they're in their houses, and like, yeah, there's no real, like, in terms of like that aesthetic of being in like Houston, Texas, like I don't think they were going for that. Maybe it's more of like, just like, we're telling you we're there, so that's what it is. They weren't focusing too much on being authentic, I think.
No.
Yeah, and then it's like, you know, the space element, which I really liked how they incorporated like the old footage with, like, you know, altering it to their advantage. And sometimes they don't, but they use like the words to kind of take the narrative. Well, I don't think they did it seamlessly in some places throughout the two seasons, but I did like the effort that they were able to kind of use it, because sometimes I was like, did that really happen? So I don't know. It kind of made you question some of that stuff, and I thought that was pretty cool. Like, well, sometimes I was like, I don't know why they're doing that, like I would like not like it, but then other times I was like, you know what, like, that's very interesting how they were doing it. So yeah, sort of, I guess the old footage was also like an aesthetic, right? Like having to incorporate the their narrative into the two seasons, which they continue like in every episode, I think. So,
and then timeline wise this was taking place at roughly the time that we would have been going to the moon. So the early 70s is the first season. The second season is the early 80s. But except for, there were some anachronistic music choices that they used for background music, which I didn't have a problem with. It didn't really throw me off exactly. But it does definitely stand out when you're looking at old cars or old clothes or something, and then you hear Nirvana or whatever, you know. Let's go ahead and render our initial spoiler-free Love It or Leave It.
Given the sort of what we talked about already, you do need to kind of let this go for like about 3 episodes. And then I feel that you'll be invested. And the payoff, especially for season one, is it's so thrilling. It really, like, just how that whole season ends, it arcs, was not what I was expecting. It takes a really dark turn that it become so invested in these characters so that when season two came along, I was like, yes, I need to know where they're at now. So for me, it's a love it, but just know that you have to give it the 3 episodes and just stick with it and you'll like the payoff, I think.
What about you, Kat?
Yeah, kind of going off of that, I think while there's some elements in season one where you may be put off, I do think if you, after 3 episodes, if you're like, you'll know whether you want to continue or you don't, if it's going to be a show for you. But I would say at least give it the 3 episodes. But I have to say, while I have been mixed on certain things, I was excited to continue and finish season one. And then I was excited that there was season two. And then I was like watching all of it. That says it enough for me, where I wasn't like, oh man, I have to press play. I was like really excited. So it's a love it for me because of certain elements of the story and how they're doing the alternate history. Some of these characters I really love, and the way they end season one and then the way they end season two, I think like is enough of a cliffhanger to kind of keep you invested in like, oh, I want to see what happens next. So it's a love it for me.
I would recommend this to most of the people that I recommend shows to, I love it. The aspect of the alternate history and the quality with which it's being made overall makes it something that I could say that I love it. I think where those people that I wouldn't recommend it to would be those that are probably overly sensitive to detecting potential political agendas in certain storylines that then, you know, they themselves blow it out of proportion for their own selves. And in so doing, have to try to burn the world down. So if that is your outlook on entertainment, where you dislike modern politics finding its way into a story, then this may not be for you, because I think that is happening. It is not... The story isn't riddled with it, I would say, but I would say it is affected by it. And we should probably talk about more about what I mean by that now.
Hooray, this is my favorite part.
Yes, I was like, oh.
I know, we dance around so much.
Yeah, so if you don't want any spoilery information, just go ahead and take our love-its and stop the podcast. Otherwise, if you want to hear a little bit more deeper talk, then please continue.
But go watch the show, then come back for the back half.
Right. So what I mean by what I just said is just that... the introduction of the women when they did it in American history seems potentially far-fetched. The way that they forced the African-American commander of a space capsule thing in the second season also felt like the exact language that we'd hear like today about a given achievement or something like that, but inserted way earlier than people would even know those words, because they weren't thinking along those lines yet.
That didn't sit well with me. Also, I was annoyed that like the Equal Rights Amendment passed in this show and it didn't pass in reality. Uh-huh. That stuck out to me. I like literally sat up. I'm like, wait, what did they just say? What are they watching? And my husband was watching with me and he's like, oh, the ERA. He goes, that passed, right? I'm like, no.
The aspect of this stuff that at least in the first season does make it make sense, and it makes it make sense in a story way, which, you know, when you see other stories that insert those modern political kind of ideas in terms of representation and all that in historical fiction, when it doesn't make sense, Frozen 2, which is supposed to sort of be, say, Norway, but they have like a black guardsman or something, that doesn't make any sense. It's just someone making that happen. What makes it work here as a plot point in season one is that the Russians did it first, and we hate that the Russians beat us at anything.
Yes, I love that. And I guess I've thought about this, and maybe it's because I'm a woman, I don't know. But I've thought about just in terms of like where we have come as like a human race is like, obviously women have been kind of in many of, like, all over the world, you know, they kind of have not been allowed to do things. And I've always thought, like, man, just in terms of, like, the human, like, imagine there must have been, like, some women geniuses that were just not allowed to do their thing. And where could we be at this moment in time, you know, just from that aspect, or, you know, minorities and, like, how, you know, everything like that, right? And so this plot point really spoke to me in that sense of, like, yeah, like, there were, like, and then we see it play out, you know, like, when Ellen, like, catches the tank, and it just, like, it was nice to see, like if they had just gotten over themselves, like, men, you know, like, that sort of thing, let it be, like, the best candidates and, like, where they could have been. And then while I don't like that they just kind of, like, never talk about it again because it kind of becomes equal, which I hope it does become equal like that, I don't know, I like that they were showing, like, it wasn't really a big deal, like, just let the women in, like, they're also badasses, you know. And then you see that in season two with, like, you know, Tracy and Gordo do it together, and, you know, it didn't really matter about the gender aspect. And so, like, it does make you kind of mad, and, like, that it didn't happen in reality. Mm-hmm. Like, if they would have just let, like, those Mercury 13 ladies,
like, do their thing, right?
Yeah, like, where they could have been, where we could have been, you know, not necessarily just for women, but, like, in the human aspect of it.
That kind of what if stuff is what makes this kind of storytelling worth paying attention to, because it takes that question and then does, like, a deep dive to explore, well, these kinds of things might have started going this direction. It can be fun to take that rabbit hole, but I'm sure, like you just mentioned, Kat, it can also be highly frustrating to see the wasted potential of what could have been.
Yeah, but I love that they did it, because I think I've thought about it too, of like you do want to beat, like, America's very much like a beat kind of, like, you know, you want to be number one. And, like, so that the fact that they use, like, oh, the Russians did it, I was like, I wish they would have done that back in the day.
There just wasn't that part of it, though, in second season when Danny makes her stand. Perhaps with the male-female equality stuff having gotten its ball rolling more effectively much earlier in their universe, perhaps the race issues went in that other direction that this show just didn't have the time to illustrate.
Yeah.
But that's a guess.
Yeah, well, there's, like, the one thing with the Alita, you were going to talk about Alita, her situation where she has to apologize to the scientist guy, it just felt like they were not on the same level. That storyline bothered me in season one because it didn't really seem like, you know, where the immigration, and they, like, would show her when she was, like, getting into science and stuff, and it didn't feel like it paid off in a nice, it just felt kind of, I don't know what the correct word is, but it just seemed kind of like they put it in there.
It had a lot more potential, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, the season two, I didn't like that she, I understood what they were going for, but it just, like, you know, given the Danny thing that you're talking about, it wasn't really earned in a way. And then her story was not, like, they didn't handle that correctly, I think, or in a good way.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, Danny had not been active in the program. She had been away from space since their trip to the moon in season one, correct? Mm-hmm. And then Ed just says, you're going back. Or she asks. Ben decides to force the commander issue. So you're right about kind of the earning portion for that. And then the Alita stuff, that was one of the big question marks I had, where I'd want more deets in the intervening time period. I guess we can understand that she has got a massive chip on her shoulder and she just screws herself left and right out of opportunities. I guess that's what we're supposed to assume.
Yeah, but she was homeless. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
Yeah, they seem to, like, kind of, like, put her situation with, like, that peanut thing in the same realm. And I was like, that is not the same. He was working for NASA as an engineer, and boo-hoo, he, like, peed himself and they make fun of him for it while did you see his house? Like, it was amazing. And she's, like, this, you know, no status kid, and she's apologizing to him. Like, you know, like, it just seemed like when they're, like, not even in the same situation. So,
yeah, that wasn't equal.
Yeah, I think that was kind of ridiculous. Like, on one hand, I can kind of get it, but on the other one, I was like, this is not even, like, the same thing.
Let me tell you, when you don't binge this show, it's a year since you've seen it, the Bill character kind of fades from memory in terms of what he did in season one and what made him stand out. So in watching the pilot again, you can get a fresher appreciation for, the kind of person he was mentally and how he kind of developed that chain of command thinking that made him feel rightly, in his mind, superior to her, just based on like tenure and earning that chair and blah, blah, blah. But you're right. It does still kind of reek of boys club in there. She earned her way into that room too.
Yes.
Margot had to do what she did. And that's an element that I'd want to know about. Like, what deeper into their relationship? Because it's highly complicated, I think. But what else about Alita? I think the thing that maybe they could be going for with Alita is she could be a Margot in the next 15 or 20 years if she can keep her head on straight. And maybe that's the ultimate payoff, and that's why she is such a slow, changing, evolving character.
Yeah, and I think Sheila's right, like, in terms of, like, the slow burn. Like, I do like, especially with, like, the kind of new age TV where they're not just going for, like, it's going to all come in season one. I mean, you know, like, everything ties up so nicely. I do like that they have, like, a plan and maybe those things, like, pay off later. I really enjoy that as, like, just watching it from a TV, you know, like, TV viewer type thing. But I think some of these are just a little frustrating. But, yeah, I think it would be cool if Alita in season three, now that they, you know, we know it's going to jump forward again, she's, like, in charge, or she's maybe, like, where Margot was, you know, at the end of season one, maybe.
Yeah. It's interesting to go back and watch that pilot, because, like, Margot was very Alita-ish. She was not in the main room. She had to know her place, but she was Von Braun's protege. I don't know if you noticed this. This is maybe just a kind of thing that I noticed. But in that first episode, they make a point of showing that she drives a German car. She drives a BMW.
Oh, I didn't notice that. Okay.
Yeah. So if I keep up my rewatch here, I'll have to see at what point. I know she probably doesn't drive that forever, given her attitudes towards Germans change.
You don't say.
Yes. I kind of bet it does, but it's just one of those subtle shifts that, you know.
Subtle? That Von Braun song was stuck in my head for days.
Well, I mean, in terms of like a vehicle choice.
Oh, no, I know, but I'm just saying like it was definitely a seismic shift. But yeah, that Von Braun song was definitely stuck in my head.
That's funny.
Not to be good. Not good to be singing about Nazis, basically.
I only have a few flaws in like this from season one and season two. And I think it a lot of it deals with like the Leto one was one moment, but I was like, you know what? I can still forgive this, whatever. But the Karen one was in season one and season two. I was like, why are they doing this? Especially with like this actress who I love, you know, and like she deserves better because she's very captivating on screen. And like, you know, Joel Kinnaman in this character, like I just was like, she can do so much more from what I've seen. And like, she has so much potential that like, it just seems like it's wasted in this character who's not really doing anything. And then so in season one, she's that hypocritical, like she wants to kind of keep the status quo or whatever. And with the housewives, and she doesn't like that Tracy's going off, but they never give a reason why. Really, and it maybe it's because she can't go off and do that too, but it doesn't seem like Ed is one of those like demanding husbands either, so it just didn't seem like, I don't know, there was not really a good reason to why she was so like hypocritical against Tracy becoming an astronaut, you know, and doing her own thing. So then that was kind of weird. And then in season two, like before she sleeps with the kid, I forgot his name.
With Tracy's son.
I was just thinking like, you know, there was the episode before it happens. And then it was like, I was like, please don't go there. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. They didn't go there. And I was like, I was actually thinking like, oh man, I'm just thinking it because I've seen in other shows, they've done this in like the past. And I was like, oh, Catherine, you're so dirty thinking that way that they're going to do this. I was like, okay, they're going to keep it, you know, whatever. And then the next episode happens and they do it. And I was like, why did she have to go to that stereotypical thing, you know? And it didn't make sense because it just like the Karen and Ed thing has not been explained in that time jump. And so there was no real reason for her to do it. And even after she explains it, like to Ed and admits it, like there's still no reason. And it just didn't make sense why it had to be him. And it just seemed kind of like a really bad writing thing, in my opinion, that kind of just I did not enjoy. So that's like probably the main thing from both seasons I did not like.
When I was watching this to get ready for this podcast, my wife was not invested in this show. This isn't really her kind of show, but she was walking through the room occasionally, and she would, you know, ask who's doing that, what are they up to, what's this character doing, and then, but she just saw the looks that these two were giving each other, even just a couple episodes out from the event. And I'm talking about her son's friend, essentially. Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Oh, so those two are going to have sex?" And I'm like, "I sure hope not, because that's some gross stuff there."
That's gross.
Yes. Oh, it was just so silly, like, you know. And I was just like, "Why did you do that?" Like, I wish it could have been with someone else, and maybe, you know, it would have been okay. But the kid, like, really, like in 2021, like, I don't know. Just,
I mean, is she supposed to be a person with problems or a mentally, emotionally stable person? Because, I mean, I'm trying to think of myself as a parent that's lost a child. And then this young man was my son's friend, who himself is still barely an adult. And then can mentally, I get over whatever hurdles are there to become involved with this person physically. I can't do that. I can't make that jump. My brain, when I think of a character doing it, I'm thinking, well, if my brain can't do it, and I'm me, what is different about this character that she could get there?
I feel like this was like her version of a midlife crisis. Like, there was no explanation for it. And maybe this was her way of dealing with her own inabilities to maybe process her son. I don't know. It definitely feels like someone who's just gone off the rails and would just, why would that be your choice? So I'm chalking it up to like a midlife crisis and, you know, maybe her kind of coming full circle on what she was accusing Tracy of. I don't know. Like, it's interesting now because now I'm thinking about it. So like Gordo did the same thing, like, well, not the same thing, but he cheated on his wife. You know, no one ended up hating him for it, but, you know, we're kind of hating on her for doing it. But like the circumstances are just so different. Like, it's just, it's yeah. Gordo's son, first of all.
Yeah. I'm not hating on her having an affair. I'm just hating on, like, why was it the kid? You know, it just seems
it could have been anyone.
Yeah, that's like a TV trope thing. And like, you know, I don't know. It just seemed like for her character, I don't know. I didn't like that, you know, like, yeah, go and have the affair with any, like, somebody else. But I just didn't like that it was like they made it so
close to home.
Yeah. And like stereotypical, like, you know, just kind of trashy in a way. I don't know. Like, it just kind of like, you know, they've kind of done that character dirty, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's a good point, because, you know, if your life is like a series of graphs that you're kind of making progress on, you know, if you were like an actuarial anyway, then in other areas where she's kind of figuring out who she wants to be and what she wants to do in her relationship with Ed, whether that's kind of winding down or taking another shape or whatever, it's hard to believe that this step is in line with all those other things that she's doing in terms of, like, you know what, I don't really want to own a bar. I'm not sure I want to be married to Ed. These other things feel like growth in a way, but this doesn't.
No, this is just selfish on her part.
Yeah, it just seems like bad writing, not like, I don't know, maybe it's just me being weird.
No, I think you're right. I mean, if she would have gone off and had sex with, you know, faceless guy, that also...
Or like the Tracy's husband, you know, like that would have made more sense, you know?
It would have been tropey, but not gross.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
The gross element makes me wonder about her mentally.
Yeah.
Which I didn't have before. But to your first point, that is probably a generational thing that you are way too young to get, and Sheila and I are slightly too young to get, which is just the attitude women of that generation had towards supporting their husbands' careers. And if you watch the movie The Right Stuff, you'll see that kind of attitude in those wives. Though, like I explained at the beginning, the real Gordo Cooper's wife getting convinced to come and play house long enough for like Life magazine or whatever it was, and NASA to assess that Gordo was stable enough to go to space and not be a liability, even though she didn't want to do that and she didn't want to be married to him anymore and all that. She still had enough of that era's mindset to do it. So I think that might be it. Sheila, do you think there's anything to that?
Yeah, there's definitely a generational component to what you're saying. And I think we were at the tail end of that as kids. Like, my mom divorced my dad in 1985, and that was just not a thing that was happening a lot. We were on like the cutting edge of that kind of a lifestyle. But yeah, there was a lot of that going along, like, you know, stay together for the kids and like stick it out. And I feel like, you know, they're on the cusp in this time frame. So they're in the early 80s. So they're like right around the same time that this was going on in my family's life. And it was something that was starting to be talked about, that, you know, you could live a separate life. I feel like they're not wrong in bringing that part up, that when she's talking to her daughter about, you know, maybe going back to college and going to India and all these things. And it sounds like a very solo kind of a trip. It's not far off from the time frame of what was actually happening in the contemporary, in IRL, you know, IRL.
See, like, I understand that part. And I understand, like, you know, women who, like, the generational thing. I think this show just doesn't, like, some of those, like, storylines, I guess maybe because they're jumping from character and, like, some of it just doesn't go into detail, maybe, or they don't show, like, I just didn't know what Karen was thinking, or, like, I don't know. It just... some nod to, like, she understands, like, she's saying these things, but, like, why? And then, like, in the second season, she goes in a different direction, but there's never really, like, you know, like, those subtle moments where you can kind of, like, see her shift or see why. And, like, I think that's the reason, like, I understood all those things. They didn't do a good job of kind of, like, I don't know if it's the writing or what, like, and to kind of explain, or not explain, I don't need everything explained to me, but, like, the characters kind of justify why they're doing those things. And, like, felt like they're, like, let's make Karen this and then that, and then, like, there's no real, like, she didn't become like a 3D character like some of the other ones did, like Tracy and Gordo and Ellen and that. And it just felt like they didn't put as much care into, like, her character in a way.
Good point. So, okay, I think you're right. I think maybe what sometimes when you do get a show or a movie that owes a lot of its setup to something else that everybody's already familiar with, you know, like, I don't know if you've ever watched The Orville, but it owes a lot to Star Trek. And it kind of assumes that you've watched at least some Star Trek before you bother to watch The Orville. Certain things are kind of set up based on your understanding of that kind of presentation of space. And then The Orville just rides with it. And my reason for bringing that up is that perhaps Karen's character does the same thing, using things like The Right Stuff or, I don't know, Mad Men or something like that. Just sort of understanding characters representing that time period and then lazily just hoping you get it on that level without making the character show it to us why she feels that way.
Yeah, I think you said the right word, like, lazily. Like, I don't have to like all these characters, and I appreciate characters I don't like, you know, like, in terms of, like, I wouldn't want to hang out with them. If they earn the stripes of whatever character they're, you know, like, whatever they are, that's fine. But it just felt like hers is not earned in a way, you know, like, with what they're presenting us with.
It's like they needed to give Ed a wife, and then they needed to keep her busy. and this is what they came up with. What about you, Sheila? Did you have any highs or lows that you want to report in on before we cash out on this podcast?
Well, we haven't really talked about a lot about what happened in space. And that, you know, that for me was where I was really compelled with the show as well. I mean, like, the drama down on Earth was one thing, but, you know, like, the second they brought guns into space, I was just like, oh, this is just not going to end well.
And
I just
didn't, right?
You know, it's just like with all the pressurization and things like that, I was just like, oh, this is just going to go so bad. And it did. And, it, you know, the payoff for it was very good in that sense that it did have a lot of tension, a lot of drama. The balance between what was happening on Earth and what was happening in space was, I felt, a little bit more balanced in the second season than in the first season. Like, the first season was a lot about, like, establishing these characters and their relationships. So I liked the fact that season two for me felt like there was just a lot more going on in space and how it was affecting directly the events on Earth.
That's true. Someone who was a kid during some of this, I think the Challenger in their world went differently.
Oh, 100%. That was actually a standout moment for me. Like, I mean, Paul, I'm sure you and I are the same. You watched that shuttle blow up on television.
Yes. In class.
I was homesick that day, and my mom, my brother, and I sat on the couch, and we watched it blow up.
They had gathered all the children.
Yep.
Out the TVs. Some of the teachers had applied to be on the shuttle.
In first grade, we filled out letters. Like one, I remember it was an art class, and that period was dedicated to nominating one teacher from the school. And basically, they had all the kids writing letters to send a teacher from our school into space. And there was this nationwide competition, and Krista McAuliffe was the one. I think she was from Texas, was she?
Yeah, I don't remember, but I watched the Netflix series about it too. Because I sobbed
through that because I remember it so vividly firsthand. But in this series, they said, you know, that they found the O-ring defect and, you know, they managed to avoid this disaster. So that for me was like a very poignant moment.
And I think it comes from that in their world, you know, this space race, Cold War stuff that you're mentioning, that in terms of like the back and forth element between the two nations, made it so that space became a focus on how the two countries were trying to one up each other.
Yeah, it was a much more fertile battleground than what was happening on Earth. Even the opening montage for season two with the newsreel that was happening, where they talk about, you know, the Russians backing down in Afghanistan so they could focus more on their space resources. So Afghanistan didn't happen, right? So you didn't have this, the Mujahideen and all of this happening. And as a result of that, like if you want to fast forward from 1980 to 2001, Osama bin Laden trained, not to take a very political stance here, but Osama bin Laden was trained in that time frame, and he became very militant as a result of the power vacuum that the war in Afghanistan left.
Right.
Right. So then if you don't have this war in Afghanistan, do you then have the September 11th, 2001 incidents that happened? Right. So there's a lot of, you know, parallel histories and realities that you can start drawing from this. That was one of those standout moments for me. Actually, the Miracle on Ice. They said that the Russians beat the Americans.
That's
as
right.
Opposed to,
that's
there
right.
was a lot in that opening montage. And I actually went back today just before we did this to go back to that because there was so much that happened in that John Lennon wasn't killed. Pope Paul was killed. Pope John Paul, rather, was killed. You know, Reagan was elected in 76 instead of 1980.
There's a bit where they show Jimmy Carter and they list him as a senator from Georgia.
Yeah. And he would have already been out of office at that time.
Yeah.
So there was just a lot of that I was just like, oh, but the Afghanistan war really stuck with me because of just like the line that you can draw from that to what happened in September 11, 2001. And I'm from New York, so you know that kind of sticks out as a big cultural moment for me.
For sure.
Yeah. I work within sight of the Twin Towers, where the Twin Towers were. Just a very interesting play on how things could have gone differently. And I, like I said, I went back to that opening montage. I'm like, which of this was real, which was not? Because that's when I went back to the Korean airliner disaster, and that was actually real. And the speech that they have Reagan saying after that disaster was actually the speech that he made to the nation after that disaster.
Thomas Paine did not die on that plane, though, in our world. He lived to old age.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yep. Yeah.
You bring up a good point, though, because while I did spend a lot of time on the Karen thing, that is like the one, like it was just the one flaw I had it throughout the season one and season two. But the space stuff in season two, I think I loved. Like, I think sometimes it was a smart choice for them to focus more in the space aspect of it in season two than they did in season one. Obviously they were still establishing things, but like the gun thing, I hadn't really thought about, cause we've seen that, but more in like a fantastical way, like with Star Wars and all like the other, you know, sci-fi series or whatever. And so this one, like, you know, like you can't really hear the gunshots and like, you just see the action. You see like, oh, the gun goes, like the bullets go. And like, if it hits the oxygen, like you'll burn alive. Like that was very real stuff that like, I guess you never really think about. Like I hadn't really seen that. And so I liked those elements of like just things that we haven't explored in like the real world with space, because we haven't gotten that far yet. It would be happening in that way.
I think that moment when they test fire the gun the first time and the man takes a step back, because that's how physics works, I think that would probably have been more recoil than that. And and they don't ever represent that again whenever they need to fire the guns.
I would imagine in a zero gravity or a very low gravity kind of situation, the recoil would be far more.
Yeah, yeah. I think it would push the gun back as much as it's pushing the bullet forward. Like same.
The equal and opposite reaction.
Right, yeah.
Yes. You know, there's no friction. We'll dust off the physics textbooks here.
Yeah, because there's no friction in space, right?
It's different. I'm not... it's been a long time. But yeah, I think it would... I think there's a reason you wouldn't use firearms in space. Like the Russians actually had like space AK-47s by the look of it. You know, yeah. They had that curly magazine that came out mm-hmm. of the bottom of their gun, and we just appeared to have space M16s painted white. So that aspect of it was a little iffy. Although, man, that shot of the Space Marines coming out of the dust to take back over the mining operation.
Yes. And the singing the Ride of the Valkyries.
That was badass.
Yeah, that was.
See, those were the moments like I loved, you know, like the love it part.
For people that don't live in Houston or around Houston, there are several times when they mention, let's go downstairs. Hey, let's have a gay old time downstairs, having sex with our friends' kids and stuff like that. You can't do that here. There's no downstairs. Unless you're upstairs, then you can come downstairs. But if you're already downstairs where, you know, most bars are, there's no downstairs beyond that. So,
like floods and stuff like that.
Yeah. So you would need to have been in like a major downtown building, you know, with very thick walls or something to have been down beneath it. But just your house or whatever, there's no downstairs.
But, you know, like it did take me back when I saw that the bar had, it said fallout shelter, and it was like, you know, basically leading down to the basement. I don't know, Paul, if that's a thing for you or Kat, even like I think you're a little bit younger. But fallout shelter, like I remember that being on my school, you know, like in the event of a nuclear disaster, like people would flock to the school. Like that's what the instructions were. Like you would go to the school. Just hearing that air raid siren that they had, I was just like, that was a reality for people like a little bit older than us, right?
I mean, New York is a target because of the populace, but Houston is a target because of the refining and the oil industry and all that. So I think there weren't a lot of those signs around because maybe they thought either we'd be wiped out completely or they wouldn't wipe it out because they needed it if they were going to invade.
Right? Oh my gosh. Like I remember that sign being like, it was on, like there was an office building that my mom used to go to. Like, I guess she would do her taxes or something there. And I remember that being on that building. I was a little kid. I was like 6 or 7 years old remembering that. But yeah, that was a major staple of my childhood. Because, you know, we're raised as Cold War kids, right?
You have no idea, Kat. Like, movies like Rocky IV and Red Dawn and just shit like that was what was coming out all the time.
Oh, my God. And we were taught to hate the Russians.
The Russians were a big, fat deal. I don't know about your childhood, Kat, because the Russians by then, I don't think were...
Well, I was watching all those movies, so like I know all those like the references, and I feel like it's still done today, like in some of these modern like shows and movies, like they still use the Russians as like the go-to villain,
the bad guy. Yeah, but now they're like oligarchs, they're like oil tycoons, and back then like they were, you know, they were the Politburo.
right. Everything was governmental. The idea of the Russian mob or something like that was not really explored in popular media the way it is now. I guess they didn't need it because they had a whole government, and that was pretty scary, and it operated on the same levels, high and low. I would recommend this to almost anybody except for those that get super butthurt about detecting what may or may not be someone, a producer, an executive's perceived political agenda and sticking it in the story. I don't know if that's the case here. I haven't talked to Ron and the others. I don't know. At times it feels like it, but like I mentioned, at least in the first season, they justify it in a story way that makes sense. So that's my one reservation for recommending it out there just generally. But other than that, I'm still I love it. What about you, Kat?
Yeah, I think overall I'm pretty much love it, and I think it's getting better as the season. Like season two is, you know, it's improved upon it. I think it got better, and so it seems like going into season three, it probably I'm excited to see what the 90s hold. Mm-hmm. And what they kind of rewrite, you know, the alternate history of things that happened and maybe, you know, what they're going to do. Most people I would recommend this to, unless you need it to everything to kind of tie up very neatly and you can't like I had the, you know, obviously the Karen issue, but she's like one of the characters, like that's probably the only one I have major issues with, and some of the other like some of the small storylines. But overall, like it's not enough for me to be like, oh, I hate this show or anything. Like I really like what they're doing with the space and like what it would be if we actually had if it had continued, because we don't have that right now. So it's kind of like, it does make you long for like, where would we be right now if, you know, we were starting to colonize the moon and you know, other planets. So it kind of does make you, I don't know, it's like kind of a nice feeling watching the show and like thinking what could be and maybe what could happen now that people are trying to revive the space race, right? So I think, yeah, but if you're a person who needs like all the storylines to make sense and like, you know, some of like the Earthlings things, like you may get frustrated with it. But I would say if you watch the first three episodes and you still kind of like, oh, I want to continue, but you're kind of mixed. That's where I was. But I think you'll know whether you want to continue or not. So if you watch those first three.
Here's a point of trivia, Sheila. That doesn't make sense if you're from Texas. If your child was, say, 17, like Kelly, right? Mm-hmm. So that means they're just 1 year into their history of driving solo.
Right.
So how many hours away from the house would you say, without cell phones, mind you, would that child be away before you'd be like, where are you? Why aren't you coming home? Just throw out a number.
Three.
Okay. Well, when she goes to find her dad, assuming that she lives around NASA.
Right. So she's in Houston.
Yes.
So I have no conception of where Arlington is compared to Houston. I'm sorry. I'm so
that's far.
Like.
That's far.
Could be four, maybe closer to 5 hours away.
So she's got a 10-hour round trip.
Yeah.
Assuming that she spent maybe an hour there eating her pho, right?
Right. Well, you know what? If Mama
That's a long
Karen,
time to go missing.
But if Mama Karen was with, you know, baby Stevens, then maybe she may not notice. And I think Kelly had a job too, so I think, you know, there would be maybe hours on a Saturday that she would be not missed.
That many hours?
But if you say it's that many hours away, then but again, if she's with baby Stevens, who knows?
I'm just saying Arlington is a haul from NASA because it's on the wrong side of Houston.
There's some plot holes in here. That's what I'm saying. So yeah, that's why I'm saying like if you need everything to tie up very nicely, you need everything to be on point, this is not it. But they give you, at least with all the other stuff that we talked about that we loved, hopefully that will be enough for you to like forget all the other little minor
details. Yeah. Yeah. Just why didn't they make it closer than Arlington? Shoot.
Because it would have been too tropey if he lived in Houston.
Or like at the end when they're at the funeral, right? And they make a point of showing Ed drive off in his Corvette, which we know is in Houston, but they're in Arlington Cemetery in Virginia.
Right. So did he drive all the way there?
Yeah. In a 1970s era Corvette, you know what that would cost?
Yeah, he'd be stopping every 7 miles for gas.
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. But who cares? Who cares? Overall, it's an overall love it, not a nitpick. Yes. Thanks for sitting with me on this one and binging this show, even though this might have been outside of your normal watching. I'm glad you mostly liked it. And thanks for sitting in on the podcast with me.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, this has been Paul.
This is Kat.
And Sheila.
And thanks for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been an original Pod Clubhouse production. Pod Clubhouse is a podcast network dedicated to encouraging collaboration among podcasters and friends to bring a fresh voice and diverse perspective on a wide array of content. Please visit and leave a comment for us at podclubhouse.com. Rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast feeds on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find us at Pod Clubhouse. Our DMs are always open, and we'd love to hear from you.